Okay, good morning, everybody. Today's daf is Pesachim daf Lamed Aleph. We left off on daf Lamed Aleph. We're at the Mishnah on the bottom of the page in daf Lamed Aleph. Today's share is sponsored by Dr. David Lander in honor of his wife and children. It's also sponsored by Zechusur for Shalema, for Rabbi Kelmer Shlita, Yehuda ben Rivka Lea, by a lifelong Talmud. We thank both sponsors very much for the sponsorship. So today we're going to discuss, the Mishnah is going to talk about whether there's an Isra of Chametz Shavralav HaPesach when the Chametz was used as a security and a loan between a Jew and a non-Jew, in either direction. Meaning it was the Jew's Chametz that was to secure money that the Jew owed, or a non-Jew's Chametz that was to secure money that the non-Jew owed to the Jew. So when do we assume that it's Chametz Shavralav HaPesach? Meaning essentially, do we look at a security as if it belongs to the borrower, or as if it belongs to the lender, at least from a chametz perspective? And then that's going to lead us into a broader choshen mishpa type of topic. The Gemara is going to have a machlokas, Abaye and Rava, whether a bal chov who has a security on a loan is considered to become the owner of the security from the time of that the loan was made, or only from the time that the loan was defaulted on, that the borrower didn't pay the money back. Only then does he really become the owner of the security. And the Gemara is going to ask on Rava from his own psak in a different case, and then from our Mishnah, and we're going to defend Rava each time. And we're also going to talk about whether a creditor becomes the owner of a collateral, and how the halacha may be different depending on whether the creditor and the debtor are Jewish, what the exact ownership of a collateral. We're familiar, or will become familiar, the pasuk says, "Ulchatiyat tzedakah," that when you give back the collateral as the person needs it, so that's considered a tzedakah. You can only do tzedakah with your own money. So it must be that on some level, you consider to be the owner of the collateral. But the question is, does that apply to a non-Jew as well? Or is that only for Jews that we assume that they become the owner of the collateral? And then the first Mishnah on Beis, we're not going to get to the second one today, but the first Mishnah on Beis is going to talk about if you have chametz that was in a building that had collapsed. So do you need to do any further action? First of all, how deeply buried does it have to be for you not to actually search it out? And is there any further action that one needs to take once the building collapses on Chametz? So let's begin with the Mishnah on the bottom of Daf Lamed Amud Beis. So says the Mishnah, Nachri Shilvas Yisrael al Chametzo, that if you have a Nachri that lends money to a Jew before Pesach, and the Jew leaves Chametz in the Nachri's house as a Mashkon, that's at least how the Gemara is going to understand. The Jew leaves the Chametz in the Nachri's house as a Mashkon, and he tells the Nachri, look, if I don't pay back the Chov by a particular time, so when the time comes to pay it back, so this Chametz is going to be yours. And the Gemara is going to make a Rukimta that this Chametz is going to be yours me'achshav, that already from now this Chametz will belong to you. So achar Pesach mutar bana, once you make all those Rukimtas that the Jew doesn't hold on to the Chametz, he gives it to the guy, and he tells the guy, when I don't pay back, it's going to be yours me'achshav, it's going to be yours retroactively to right now. So then yes, then of course mutar bana, then it's considered to be the Chametz of the Nachri over the course of Pesach, and after Pesach it's going to be mutar bana, provided of course that the Jew defaults and he never pays back, and therefore the Nachri gets to keep the Chametz. Yisrael Shilves Nachri al Chametz. But if you have in the reverse that the Nachri leaves his Chametz by the Jew as a Mashkon, and he tells the Jew that if I don't pay you back in time, this Chametz will be yours, and then Achra Pesach Asur Bana, then after Pesach it's going to be Asur Bana, because that's considered Chemtzo Shel Yisrael, because the Jew took ownership of it, is considered to have taken ownership of it from the very time of the loan, which was before Pesach, and therefore it's Chametz Shel Yisrael Sha'avar Alav HaPesach. So now the Gemara is going to have Machlokas Amoraim about Balchov collecting from the Chasu Meshubadim. Itmar Balchov Abayir Malmafreyu Gova, someone lends money to somebody else and he's Meshabed his Nechasim. He says that there's a lien on this property to pay back the loan, and he tells the Malva that if I don't pay back the Chov until by a certain time, so you can go to this property to collect what I owe you. And the time comes, he didn't pay back, so the Malva collects his Chov from that property. So Abaye says the Mafreya who gova, Abaye the Mafreya who gova, that when he collects it, that chov, it's igloy milsul Mafreya, that at the time of the halva'a it already belonged to him. Rava Amar, no, mikanu labo who gova, he didn't pay back the money, so instead I'm going to collect this property. So when I take this property, that's when it becomes mine. But prior to that, when there was a loan out and he just owed me money, this property didn't belong to me yet at that that time, it's only mikanu laba. That is the shita of Rava. So the Gemara just qualifies what exactly is the case of this machlokas, where they argue about how we retroactively view it. So kalhecha da aktish lova v'zabin lova, when the lova was maktish is nechasim, or he sold those nechasim, kuliyam lo pligi, then everyone's going to agree, dasi malva v'tarif. Everyone agrees that the mechira is not valid, the hektish is not valid, because even Rava, who holds that the malva is kona only from the shaskavia, and until then it was in the rishus of the lova, would be moda, that since at the time of the mechira, these nechasim were mishuba to the malva, so the lova doesn't have the right to go around selling these things, meaning this there's a lien on this property, this is meant to pay back the loan if he doesn't pay it back himself. So he can't go around and just treating this property like any other property that he owns and just sell it and be makdish it and do whatever he wants. So everyone's going to be moda, that the malva can come and take those nechasim from the lekuchos, or if he gave it to Hegdish, the malva can come and take it back from Hegdish. Because the Mishnah tells us in Maseches Erechin that if a person is makdish, if a lova is makdish nechasim that are worth less than the chov that he owes, so mosiv odinar upoda es nechasim elu. The malva, when he wants to get that property back, all he has to do is add a dinar, throw in an extra dinar onto the halva'a, and then he'll be with that dinar, he's going to be podayed from Hegdish, and he'll be able to then collect that property as his chov. Meikra din, the lova was not allowed, was not permitted to be makdish those nechasim, because they were meant as a mashkun to the malva to pay back the chov, and the malva can take him, really make right, then the malva doesn't have to even give a dinar, the malva can just take it away from Hegdish. The guy had no right to be makdish. That's a takana midrabanan. Takana midrabanan, we don't want it to look like something belonged to Hegdish yesterday and a guy just walks in and takes it from Hegdish, now it belongs to him without paying anything. So in order that it shouldn't look bad, it should look like there was some sort of pidyon that was done, so we make him be mosif dinar, but really that's only a din midrabanan. But bottom line is, the fellow had no right to be makdish in the first place because there was a lien on that. Keep ligi, the whole machlokas between Abai and Rava, whether the mafrei or mikadal abba, is only dezabin malve, the kaddish malve, is if the malve was one that sold it or was makdish the karka that was meshuba to him before the time to pay it came back. So he was sort of jumping the gun a little bit. I mean, yeah, you told me that this property will pay me back if you don't pay me back in cash, if you don't pay me back the money they owe me. And I was makdish the property before even the Zman Piraon came, before it even came time for you to pay back the money. I guessed right, you didn't pay back the money, and therefore this property really now does belong to me, but did it belong to me at the time that I was Makdish it? So Abayam le Mafrei Ugovakim de Matazim de Vilapare, Igloy Muslim Mafrei de Meyakar Barishus Abakai. Abayam says, as long as I guessed right, it was in fact mine the whole time. I mean, as long as I, as you didn't pay back in cash when the time came, so then Enochinami, I collect from this property, and it's considered as if this property belonged to me the entire time, so I had every right for Shapar Agdish, Shapar Zabin, I had every right to be Makdish, and I had every right to sell it. How did I know that I was right? Meaning, until you didn't pay back, I didn't own this property. It's only when you failed to pay me back money, that's when I became the owner of this property. So for me to sell this property, for me to be makdish this property, that is totally inappropriate. That's something that I should not have have the right to do. That's the machlokas Abai and Rava. Now we're going to challenge Rava. So again, critical to remember that Rava holds it's only mikanu lahaba, that if I lend you money and you tell me that you're going to pay back, but if you don't pay back, this property is meshuba to pay back the loan. So it's only, according to Rava, it's only when you fail to pay me back that I become the owner of that property. So says the Gemara, Umi Amar Rava Hachi. Does Rava really say that a Bal Chov is only gove from the Shas? He's only the owner, he's only kona from the Shas Kaviyah. But didn't we learn that if Ruvain sells a field to Shimon with Achrayas, and now we're not using me and you, we're going to use Ruvain and Shimon. Ruvain sells a field to Shimon Ba'achrayus. Meaning, what does that mean? That Ruvain sells a field to Shimon and tells Shimon, if anyone gives you any problems with this field, I will reimburse you. Meaning, if someone comes and says, oh, Ruvain owes me money, and therefore I'm going to take this field, so I will reimburse you. I'm taking taking full achrayus for the field. So the zakfan alav b'milva. And then, but when Reuven sold the field to Shimon, Shimon should have paid for the field. Problem is, Shimon didn't have the money at the time, so Shimon took a mortgage. He said, "I'll pay you for the field later." So zakfan alav b'milva, I owe you $100,000 for this field. I owe you the money. So Shimon never paid for it. Shimon took possession of it, and now if anyone takes it away from Shimon, Reuven's going to have to pay Shimon back. But Shimon still owes Reuven the money for the field itself. And then, to complicate matters, Umeis Reuven. Reuven dies. Reuven, who is the seller, dies. He has not yet paid Shimon, and Shimon has not yet paid him for the field. Savas about Chov de Reuven, Vitarv Le Mishimon. And then, one of Reuven's creditors comes and says, you know, Reuven owed me money before he died, and he takes the field away from Shimon. Vasa Shimon Upaisi Bezuze. Now, Shimon didn't want to lose the field, so Shimon said, you know what? I owe Reuven money anyway. I never paid for the field. So instead of me giving this Balchov the field, let me just take the money that I owe to Reuven anyway, and I'll give that to the Balchov, and I'll keep the field. And that way everyone will be happy, because, you know, if I were to have the field confiscated from me, I'd be able to go get it back from Reuven, and I would have to pay Reuven anyway, because I still owe him the money for the field. So cut out the middleman. I'll just give the money to this Balchov, and I'll keep the field for myself, and that way everyone will be happy. And now Shimon Tainas that he doesn't have to pay for the field anymore, because he just did. He just paid the Balchov the money for the field. So Dinu Dasu B'nei Reuven Ramele L'Shimon, the halacha is that Reuven's Yorshim can come and tell Shimon Anan Metatli Shava Kavuch Avun Gabach, that our father left only the money. Meaning, what did our father leave with you? The money that you owed him. What did you have in your possession that belonged to our father? The money that you owed him. And Metatli Yasmin Al-Chav L'Mishtabdi, the money that you owe to a guy who died, you don't have to go and pay it back to someone else. It's only properties, only real estate is meshuba to Balichov. I don't know why you paid the guy in cash. You shouldn't have. It's only the real estate that was meshubad. So that's not considered the payment for the money that you owed our father for the field. So you should not have given that money to that guy, because that was not meshubad to that guy. And therefore, you still owe us the money for the field. You still have to pay back the field. So Amar Rava. So Rava comments, wow, ipikach Shimon. So if Shimon wanted to be smart and he didn't want to have to pay back Reuven after this, so Magbalu Ara, he could tell the Bnei Reuven, look, you're right, I still owe your father the money, but I don't have any cash right now. So instead of paying money, I'm going to give you this field, which is worth that same amount of money. So it will turn out that the Bnei Reuven are collecting the field in lieu of payment for the field. And then, once you're taking the field away from me, Vadagavi Laminayu, then I could take it right back from you. Because when your father sold me this field, it was Bachrayus. And when you sell a field, Bachrayus, you take responsibility that if anyone were to be Govit. So yeah, it's you yourself that are being Govit. Fine. But someone was Govit from me. So now you owe me the money back. So now he takes the field back. That if you some collect karka because it was owed to their father, a balchov can come and collect it from them, meaning someone else who their father owed money to can come and collect it from them. So over here, it's all the same person. That Shimon gave the Bnei Reuven the field in lieu of payment, but now that means that field was taken away from Shimon by the Bnei Reuven, and therefore the Bnei Reuven owe Shimon that field back. So the Gemara understands, Rav Nachman holds, that another Balchov can collect from the Yisomim the karka that from the guy that borrowed money from their father, because at the time that they're gova, that the Yisomim are gova the karka from the Balchov of their father, this karka belonged to their father from the Shas Halva, and therefore there's a Shibun Mechasim. So that's why another Balchov can come and collect it from them. So I Amr Pishlom. So says Gemara, I understand very well. If you're going to say the Mafreya, who gova, that a Balchov owns it retroactively and really belonged to him at the time of the Halva itself. Then I understand why another Balchov can come and collect it, because the commander governor, it's as if that karka already belonged to them when the father was still alive. And but if you're going to say that a Balchov only becomes the owner of the karka when he actually collects it, and it's only at the time of the piraon, it's only at the time of the payment of the chov, and when the chov was defaulted on, only then does he become the owner of that karka. So then my chozer regovos amen. Why could another balchov? Why is another balchov allowed to come and collect it from them? Havi commanded zavin yasmi nichsidami. This should be considered as if Yisomim bought nechassim with their own money after their father died. V'ilu kani yasmi nichsi. And the halacha is if Yisomim buy nechassim with their money after the father died, mikam ishtabdi lebalchov. Is that mushubel to a balchov? That the balchov of their father has nothing to do with the properties that they buy. That's for sure not meshubah to the balchov. So what you see from Rav Nachman is that it must be that a balchov is goveh l'mafreya. And Rava holds like him that Yisomim that were gover karka with the chov of their father, another balchov of their father could come and collect that from them. So it turns out that that Rava holds that a balchov is gover l'mafreya. So it's a Rava against Rava. Meaning, what did we say over here? That it was va'amar Rava ipikach Shimon. Rava's the one that came up with this eitzah. Oh, Shimon's really smart. What he should do is pay back with the karka and then get reimbursed from that karka itself. So apparently Rava is the one that holds that Balchov is not Mikan Olaba, the Balchov is L'mafreyahu Goveh. Otherwise that whole Eitzah doesn't work. So isn't that a cash on what we said that Rava holds? That Balchov is Goveh Mikan Olaba and not L'mafreya. So it says, no, Shiny Hasam, Dharma Luhu, Kiechi, Dishtabin L'chul L'avuchon, Mishtabin Nami, L'balchov D'avuchon. The reason that the Yisomim that collected karka with the chov of their for the chov of their father, another balchov can come and collect it from them, is because that balchov could say that which you collected for the shibud that your father had, just like it was meshubah to you, that karka was meshubah to you, it was meshubah to me also. Meaning if someone owed your father money and your father owed me money, then guess what? Someone owed me money. Meaning if A owes money to B and B owes money to C, really you could just cut out the middleman. A owes money to C. So yes, this guy owed your father money because he never paid for the field. Great, so he owed your father. But guess what? Your father owed me money. So it should be considered as if this guy owed me the money. And therefore, it's not about l'mafreya or mikan olaba, but that shibud existed the entire time. Midi Rabbi Nasan. And that's based on the chiddush of Rabbi Nasan. Because that's that idea of if A owes B money and B owes C money, then we could cut out the middleman. That's called shibud of Rabbi Nasan. Tanya, the Brisa tells us, Rabbi Nasan Omer, Rabbi Nasan tells us, minayin lenoch shebechaveru mana. How do I know that if one guy owes another guy $100, bechaveru bechaveru, and B owes it to C, that same amount of money, shemotzin mizah, benosin mizah, that we could take it away from one guy and give it to the other guy. So tamalom, Rabbi Nasan asher ashamlo. So again, if you have a balchov, that's Toveah, $100 from Reuven, and Reuven was Toveah, $100 from Shimon, so the you could take it from Shimon and give it to the Balchov of Reuven, even though Shimon is not the Balchov of that guy, you can cut out the middleman and give it to him. And that's based on the pasuk, V'nasan Asher Ashamlo. It doesn't say V'nasan Asher Hilvahulo, give it to the guy that you borrowed from, because you're not chayiv to dafka pay the guy you borrowed from, you're chayiv to pay the guy who's owed the money, ultimately. And that might be the malva of your balchov, and therefore the malva can collect the money from whoever owes it to the lova. So he doesn't have to collect it directly from the lova. So Rav Nachman holds that the balchov, another balchov of their father can collect from the yisomim whatever karka the yisomim collected because it was owed to their father, because it was already meshuba to that guy even while the father was alive, based on this din of Rabbi Nasan. And that's what Rava would say as well, that Shimon could tell the Bnei Ruv, just like the my nechassim or meshuba to your father because of the sale of the karka, and I owed him money for the sale of the karka, but they were meshuba to me also because I have achrayus on that karka. I bought it with secure. I bought it with guarantee. So I owed your father money, but then your father owed me money. So I can cut out the middleman and I'll give myself money back. So that's why the Rava was able to come up with that eitzah, that as long as he gives the karka, they can collect the karka back again. But it really has nothing to do with the mafreya who gova or mikana la'aba who gova. So that's the first challenge to Rava from Rava's own statement, and that's how we defend the challenge to Rava. Tanan. Then we have the second challenge to Rava, and this is why the whole discussion is really here. The second challenge to Rava is from our Mishnah. Nakri shehilva es Yisrael al chemtso. So the Yisrael is meshabed his chametz to pay back a loan that he owes to the Nachri. He tells the Nachri, look, if I don't pay you back by a certain time, you can come into my house and you can collect my chametz, you can take all my chametz. So achra Pesach, if after Pesach comes and the Jew didn't pay back the loan, mutar ba'ana, that chametz is mutar ba'ana, it's considered to have belonged to the Nachri the entire time. At this point in the Gemara, that's what we're assuming. We're assuming that the Jew kept it in his house the entire time. So the Jew owes the non-Jew money, and he says, look, if I don't pay you back that money that I owe you, this chametz, you can take, you go to my liquor, my schnapps collection, and you can take whatever you want from that, and that will belong, that will go to pay back the loan. So when the Jew does not pay the Nachri back, and he comes and he collects that schnapps, it turns out that it's not chametz sha'avar lava pesach, it's mutar ba'ana. So yam pishlam l'mafreyu gova, I understand very well if you can assume, like Abaye, that it's the mafreyu who gova that really owned it the entire time, antulachi mutar ba'ana, that's why it's mutar ba'ana. Eliam mikanu labo gova, but if you say he only becomes the owner, mikanu labo, only going forward, amay mutar ba'ana, b'rishus di Yisrael avakai, why would that be mutar ba'ana? It was in the rishus of the Yisrael the whole time, and the Nachri only became the owner when the Jew defaulted on the loan, so throughout Pesach, it belonged to the Jew. So says Mar Hakamai Eskinam Kishir Hinu Mitzlo. Now the case must be, the Jew didn't just leave it in his house the entire time. At the time that the Jew borrowed the money, he said, here, this is my chametz, if I don't pay you back money, this will just belong to you. And he actually gave him possession of it. So it's only because the guy had possession of it throughout the entire Pesach, that's why we assume that it was l'mafreya, belonged to him the entire time. But if the guy did not take possession of it, and it was in the Jew's house, then we assume that it's only mikana labo gova, would not be l'mafreya gova. That's how Rava would defend himself. So says the Gemara, that idea is really subject to a machlokas. Meaning this machlokas, Abai and Rava, with the mafreya gova, or mikanu labo gova, may in fact be a machlokas tanoim. Lema ketanoim. Maybe the machlokas Abai and Rava is really totally in the following machlokas tanoim in a brisa. Yisrael shehilvel nachri al chemtzo. If a Yisrael lends money to a guy with chametz as the security, and he makes a tanai that if he doesn't pay him back until by a certain date, then he'll have the chametz. La'achra Pesach eino over. After Pesach, there's no violation of an isra hana'a from that chametz. It was a guy's chametz. Mishum Rameir Omer over. But Rameir disagrees. He says it is a violation of hana'a from that chametz. It's chametz shavar lava Pesach. So it's a machlokas. So my love, what are they arguing about? Aren't they talking about a case where the Nachri did not actually give physical possession of the chametz to the Jew on Pesach? It was still in the Nachri's house. Again, this is a case where the Nachri borrowed the money from the Jew, and the Nachri said, if I don't pay you back, you can have this chametz instead. But the Nachri kept the chametz in his house over the course of Pesach. And my love, Baha Kamifli, and this is what they're arguing about. The Marsav, our Rabbi Meir, must hold l'mafreya who gove. That really the Jew was already the owner at the time of the loan. That it's not only when the loan was defaulted on that he becomes the owner. The entire time he was the owner of the chametz. Umar Savran, the Tanakam holds, no, mikanu labo gove, that it's only after Pesach that the Jew becomes the owner of the chametz. It was in the non-Jew's possession the entire time, and the non-Jew only owed money the entire time. He didn't owe chametz. It's only when he failed to pay the money that the chametz now is in the possession of the Jew after Pesach. Vitizbra, so says Umar, really, is that the machlokas? The machlokas is really only about mikanu labo or l'mafreya? It's not going to work, because if you look at the seifa of the brisa, it won't add up. Ema seifa, the seifa of the brisa goes on to say, Aval Nachri Shevli Yisrael Al Chemtzo. But what if it was the reverse? What if the Jew was the borrower and the Jew guaranteed his chametz for the Nachri, and then the Jew didn't pay back after Pesach, and now the Nachri has the chametz after Pesach? Is that chametz Shavar Lava Pesach? So logically, the way the brisa should say it is, flip it. The opinions are flipped. The Tanakam and Reb Meir will say the same. If it's really about l'mikanu labo or l'mafreya hu gove, so whenever you have a loan and there's security, there's a guarantee that you'll get paid back from this chametz. So that's it. So then it will depend on how you view that. Do you view that as if he becomes the owner of that already from the time of the loan, or only from the time of the Piron HaChov? But what does it actually say? It says, Abul Nachri Shehil V'li Yisrael Al Chemtzo La'achar Pesach Divrei Hakol Over. Everyone says that that's called chametz shavalava pesach. What it should have said is, according to the Tanakhama, in the first case that you were not over because it's only Mikana Laba who gove, and it's the Chametz of a Nachri until the time of the Gviya, Hacha over. Over here, it should be the Chametz of a Yisrael up until the time of the Gviya. Ulmandi Amar Hasam over, and according to our Meir who said in the previous case that you are over because it's the Mafreya who gove, and therefore it was the Chametz of Yisrael the entire time, Hacha Eino over. Should say over here, you're not in violation because it was Chametz Shal Nachri the entire time. If that's really what it was about, if it was only about Mikana Laba Ulmafreya, Ella, so we have to say is really the Tanakam and Rameyer agree that it's Mikana Laba and it has nothing to do with the Machlokas and Abay and Rava. V'hachav Mayaskinan, because over here the case is Kigon Shehirhinu Etzlo, that the case is that not only did he say you can collect this Chametz in lieu of money if I don't pay back, but he gave him possession of the Chametz. The borrower gave the lender possession of the Chametz already at the time of it was a mashko, and he gave it to him as a collateral already at the time of the loan itself. It's not just a guarantee, it's a collateral that he actually took possession of. The Kamifl Gibid Rabbi Yitzchak and Machlokas Tanakam and Reb Meir is about how we view the ownership of a collateral when there's a non-Jew involved in the deal. Meaning that we're about to demonstrate that in a regular case between two Jews, if I give you a collateral, you become the owner of that collateral. Because based on the Pasul Chatzi at Tzedakah, you become the owner of that collateral. Question is, how does that work when it's a Jew and a non-Jew? Does a non-Jew also become an owner of a collateral when he's owed money? How do I know in general when there's a deal between two Jews? When you take possession of a collateral, you are the owner of that collateral, Shenemar, because it says by a malva who returns a mashkon to the lover, the pasuk says, Hashef tashiv lo savot kiva Hashemesh v'shachav v'sam savarecha ulcha tiyet tzedakah. Pasuk says, if you're a nice guy, this fellow owes you money, and he gave you his clothing as a collateral, and you return it whenever he needs it. He gave you his tuxedo as a collateral, so whenever he has a black tie event that he has to go to, you give him back his tuxedo, and then you take it back whenever he needs it back. The example the pasuk of course gives is pajamas or whatever, but you know, you give him back whatever it is that he needs when he needs it, so you're a big bal tzedakah. It's a really wonderful thing to do. Now, generally speaking, a person can only do tzedakah with their own money. You can't do tzedakah with somebody else's money. That's generally not called tzedakah if you're doing it with somebody else's money. So the fact that it's called l'chad tiyat tzedakah, that's a raya that it's yours, that it belongs to the bal chov. So enu kona mashkon tzedakah minayin. If you're not kona the mashkon, then how would we consider that to be a tzedakah? So mikana bal chov shekona mashkon. That's the rule when it comes to two Jews. So tanakam savar hani mili yisrael mi yisrael. Yeah, that's when it's two Jews who de karina bay l'chad tiyat tzedakah. That's what we say. But Yisrael, who takes a mashkon from a nachri, is not kona the mashkon. The chametz still belongs to the nachri, even though it was given, it was collateralized, it was given as collateral to the Jew. And that's why it's not a violation of Bal Yira, Bal Yimatze, and it's not going to be chametz shavar lava Pesach after Pesach, because it belonged to the nachri the whole time. Rameir Sover, Kal V'chomer. Rameir will say, it's Kal V'chomer, Yisrael Kani. If Yisrael, we normally assume that when there's a business dealing between the Yisrael and Nachri, of course it has to be with absolute integrity, but the Yisrael gets the upper hand. So if between a Yisrael and another Yisrael, the Bal Chov is Kona the Mashkon, Yisrael mi Nachri lo Kolshkein. For sure, when a Yisrael gets a Mashkon from a Nachri, it would be he would become the owner of that Mashkon, which normally means it's normally beneficial to him to be the owner of that Mashkon. Over here, of course, it's not, because it's Chametz and it's on Pesach, so it's going to be afterwards. But if you have a Nachri that lends money to a Jew, and the Jew gives his chametz as collateral, so achar pesach divrei hakol over, then everyone's going to say it's a violation of Bal Yira, because hasam vade nachri Yisrael lo kani. That for sure everyone agrees, that a nachri does not become the owner of a collateral. This chiddush of a l'chad tiyat tzedakah that the Torah says that when you're a bal chov, you're kona that mashkon, that chiddush was not said for a nachri, to benefit a nachri, that the nachri who's a bal chov owns the mashkon. And therefore this machlokah machlokes about the mashkon has nothing to do with the machlokes of Abaye Rava. Machlokes of Abaye Rava was not in the case of a collateral where the guy actually took possession. Machlokes of Abaye Rava is mikana labor lemafreya who gove when something is a guarantee to pay back from that property if he doesn't pay back the loan, but not when there's an actual collateral. So now that we said that according to everybody, a nachri is not kona a mashkon from Yisrael, so we're going to go back to challenge the way we were miyashev our Mishnah with the Shita of Rava. Again, to recall, we pointed out that according to our Mishnah, according to Rava, rather, we had to say that our Mishnah is where he actually gave him physical possession of it. Otherwise, our Mishnah would be against Rava. Otherwise, our Mishnah was a challenge to Rava. So now it says Gemara Tana. Our Mishnah said, "Nachri shilvi Yisrael al chemtzo." If a Nachri lends money to a Jew for his chametz achra Pesach, and the time comes after Pesach and he doesn't pay it back, mutar ba'ana, the chametz is mutar ba'ana, and that was a kasha and Rava who holds mikanu labo gove. Why is the chametz mutar ba'ana? The Nachri is only kone it right now. The Nachri didn't own it the whole time. On Pesach, it was in the reshus of the Yisrael, and it should have been chametz shavah lav Pesach. That was asur ba'ana. So what did the Gemara answer? No, it wasn't in the Jew's house. The Jew had given it to the non-Jew. He had said, if I don't pay you back, this chametz will be yours, but here, take possession of it right now. So that's why it's not chametz shavah lav Pesach. So says Gemara, is that enough? That I gave it to him, and I said, if I don't pay you back, this is yours? I understand that I gave it to him, but we just said that when it comes to a Nachri getting a Mashkon from Yisrael, right, this is a Mashkon, essentially, if I gave it to him. When a Nachri gets a Mashkon from Yisrael, the Nachri does not become the owner of the Mashkon. That's what we just got through saying, that according to everybody, the Nachri does not become the owner of the Mashkon. So how could it be that it's not Chametz Shavah Rava Lav Pesach? Says Mar Lo Kasha, the Mishnah is not only talking about that I gave him the physical possession of the chametz, but I told him that if I don't pay him back, I told the Nachri, if I don't pay him back, this chametz will belong to him already, me'achshav. And therefore the Nachri was kona the money already at that time. He was kona the chametz already at that time. So that because I used that word, me'achshav. So that's why it's not chametz shavah lav Pesach. But the Bryce is talking about where the lova gave the mal to the mashkon. He did not say that you're kone it me'achshav. He gave it like any other mashkon, and he said, if I don't pay it back, then you could just keep the mashkon. So the gabei nachri that was that lent money to a Jew, and the Jew gives his chametz as a mashkon, everyone's going to agree that even when he doesn't pay it back, he's not going to be allowed to get anah from it because mikanu la'bo gove, and it belonged to Yisrael the whole time. So if you didn't say me'achshav, it's all about saying me'achshav. Umina temer d'shanilei. How do I know that there's a difference between saying bein heichad amr me'achshav bein heichad amr me'achshav? How do I know that saying me'achshav matters? Where do we ever see that it makes a difference whether you said me'achshav or not? Titania, because we have a brisa. Nachri shehir him pasporni etzel Yisrael. If a nachri gave a mashkon before Pesach of bread baked in a large oven, and he gave that as a mashkon to Yisrael for his chov, meaning the nachri owes the Yisrael money, and he says, look, if I don't pay back, this is your mashkon. So eino over, the Yisrael does not violate balira on Pesach because he's not kona the mashkon of a nachri. But v'mamarlo higaticha. But if the nachri says that word higaticha, which is like a form of me'achshav, meaning here it's yours. Over, then the Yisrael violates balira by having possession of that mashkon on Pesach. So Maishna Reishna Maishna Sefer, what difference does it make whether he says higaticha or not? Elav Shraminah Shain Echadam Lemeachshav Lechadam Lemeachshav. It must be that higaticha is the equivalent of Me'achshav, and when you say Me'achshav, then the Balchov actually is kona the mashkon for sure. But when you don't say Me'achshav, the Balchov will not be kona the mashkon if it's a deal between a Nachri and a Yisrael. So Shmaminah. So that's the raya that Me'achshav makes a difference. So again, when it comes to a regular deal between two Jews, so as the Balchov is always going to be called a mashkon. That's a gzeres hakas, that's a chiddush akra, that the Balchov is called the mashkon. The question is a Nachri kona the mashkon of a Yisrael when the Nachri is of the money from a Yisrael? So generally speaking, no, that chiddush is not said for a Nachri, that a Nachri is going to become the owner of the mashkon, but there's a way to make it happen. How do you make it that the Nachri is the owner of the mashkon? You say, me'achshav, you say that let it belong to you from right now. So now, Tanu Rabbanan, Chanos Shal Yisrael Umelai Shal Yisrael. Let's say a Jew owns a store, and he has, and all the contents of the store belong to the Jew. Upalei Nachri Nechnasim L'Sham, but there are non-Jewish workers that are there to help out, that, you know, stock the shelves or whatever else, or, you know, man the register or whatever. So they do the Melech. There, Chametz Shenimtzu Sham Achar Pesach. Then you found random Chametz in the store. Do you assume that it was the Nachri's lunch that you found in the store that he brought in for his work day? Or do you assume that, no, this was a product in the store that belongs to the Jew? So Asur Bana, then it's, we assume it belonged to a Jew. It's Asur Bana, it's Chametz Shavalav Pesach. Vein Tzarech Lam Bachila, and obviously it's going to be Asur Bachila. We assume that it came from that which is being sold in the store. It did not come from the Nachri, you know, when he brought his lunch to the store that day. But if the store is owned by a non-Jew and there are Jewish employees that work in the store, then the chametz that you find there after Pesach is even mutter to eat, and of course is mutter b'ana, because we assume that that belonged to the Nachri store owner. It did not belong to the Jew. That's the simplest girsa. That's Rashi's girsa in the Gemara. That's the one we're going to stick with. Okay, new Mishnah now. Chametz shenavel of mapolas hareu kimavor. So a little less complicated now. You have chametz that was in a house. The house caved in. So do you have to now go and find it to destroy it? So says Mishnah, no, it's already destroyed. The whole house caved in on it, so it's destroyed. Shimon Muyalomer kol shein akel of yachol chapes acharav. He qualifies that that's only if a dog would not be able to find it. Meaning only if it's so deeply buried that a dog wouldn't be able to sniff it out. Only then do we say that it's already destroyed and you don't need to do anything further. So says the Gemara, Amar Rav Chisda, but even though we said it's already mivor, v'tzarek shevata b'libo, you still have to do bittul, because we're choshesh that maybe some of the rubble will be removed in the middle of Pesach, and then it will turn out that you're in violation of Bal Yirah. So in order to avoid violating Bal Yirah by Yimatze, you have to also do bittul. Rashi is mashma that minatora, you would not be in violation of Bal Yirah. It's only a chshash shemi yipanes amapolos b'Pesach that the Chum require you to be mivatel. In Chidush Rabbeinu David, he writes that the Chum require you to be mivatel because it's berushuso, but they weren't matriach you to be mivarid because it's not matzoi biyado. So this is berushuso, but not biyado. So since it's berushuso, you need to do bittel on a daraisa level. It's just that, and normally we require more than just bittel. Normally we require bedika and biur, but that's only when it's biyado. It's only when you have access. Since you don't have access anyway, there's no need for bedika and biur. So Tanakam. How deeply does it have to be buried to say that it's already mevor? So with the Rav Shimon Gamliel said in the Mishnah that it's got to be deep enough that a dog won't be able to sniff it out. How much is that? Shlosha tvachim. So that is considered, that's three tvachim. We assume it's chafitzas hakelev. So that's an interesting discussion, that we assume a dog's not going to find something three tvachim. Rav Meisha has a tshuva where he discusses how deep, there's a mitzvah of kvura in the Torah. How deeply do you have to bury a body in order to fulfill the mitzvah of kvura? Okay, so there are regulations and laws in terms of how cemeteries work, and it's way, way deep. You know, 6 feet underground is way, way deep. But the halacha doesn't require that it be so deep. When is this ever going to be nogea? So sadly, right after the Holocaust, there were a lot of dead bodies and that were strewn about, and there were Jews that were trying to bring to Kever Yisrael as many as possible. Rosh Weiss has a remarkable story with his father, that his father was aiding the Kleisenberger Rebbe in burying as many Jews as they can find. Everybody they could find, they were burying, and they were malnourished, and they couldn't. They had no keichus themselves. But they were, so how deeply do they have to bury the body? Rosh Weiss's maisa is that his father was so exhausted. He said to the Rebbe, I just can't. I give up. I can't do it anymore. I just don't have the koichas to do it. And the Kleisenberger Rebbe said, I'll give you whatever bracha you want. Tell me what bracha you want. So he said, I want a bracha that I should have children who light up the world with their Torah. So he gave him a bracha. You keep going, I'll give you a bracha that you should have children who light up the world with their Torah. And all of we know Rav Asher Weiss, all of his brothers are Talmidei Chacham Gadol. Rav Binyamin Weiss in Montreal is the chief rabbi in Montreal. They're all huge Talmidei Chacham. So the bracha worked. Or the kind of guy that asks for a bracha for children Talmidei Chacham is the kind of guy that's going to raise children Talmidei Chacham. But anyway, Rav Meisher writes in a tshuva, that a raya from this Gemara, that it's three tefachim. tefachim. The three tefachim we assume is beyond chafis hakelef. He says you could argue that it's not a great raya, that maybe it has to be a little bit deeper because we're not talking about chametz when it comes to a body. We're talking about flesh, and flesh has a dog might be able to sniff out much more quickly. So you could argue that that there's a difference in terms of that. But so he says, but it's not going to be more than four tefachim. So and we don't have a raya that it's. I mean, the closest thing we have a raya to is this sugya. So three tefachim deep in the ground is probably already a kiyum of the mitzvah of kura. This also comes up when it comes to burying a nathel. The minhag is that they don't bury a nathel 6 feet underground. So how deep do you have to bury it? Only about three tefachim. Let's just finish up to the Mishnah. Amar Rav Acha b'Rei Rav Yosef Rashi, Hadam Shmuel Ksav Meinam Shmira El Bekarka. That which we say that if you agree to be a shomer for someone else's money, the only way to properly protect it is by hiding it in the ground. So me being in shlosh tefachim alo, does that also need to be three tefachim underground? Amalei hachamishum recha being shlosh tefachim hachamishum ksuye me enahu velo bayish shlosha. Now over here there's the reach of the chametz that we're trying to cover up. So the reach of the chametz, you need three tefachim underground to assume that a dog's not going to dig it up. But when it comes to money, there's no reach, there's no smell of the money. You just need to make sure that people don't see it. So that way it will be protected. So you don't need three tefachim underground. Okay, you don't need three tefachim, but v'kama, how deep underground does it have to be buried in order to really be protected? Amar Rafin bar Papa, misichra tefach. Rav Acha bar Papa from the place called Sichra said that the depth is a depth of one tefach, and that's enough to cover it that people won't be able to see it, and then you're doing your job as a shomer. Okay, Be'ez Hashem, tomorrow we'll pick up at the bottom Mishnah on Lamed Aleph on base.